Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on Pristine Exterior Paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
This is the Adam Carriker Show on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Adam Carriker Show, the show that gives you unique insights, unbridled honesty, and producer Jake and I are going to have a whole lot of fun in the process. Now, during commercial break, Jake and I were chatting about Ed Foley and just the phenomenal job that he's been doing. I can't even be sarcastic about it. I can't believe how bad our special teams are. Like, this is the only, and Ed Foley's done it for a long time. This is a man with a resume that would impress you. I'm not sitting here saying he's a bad football coach. I'm saying he's the special teams coach, and our special teams are bad, and it doesn't add up. Jake, how, before we get to the eight football games, and we're going to go through quickly all eight of these games from this past weekend, including Florida State. I mean, should they just forfeit the rest of the year? Like, seriously? But we'll get to that in a second. How in the world, when this is the only thing you do, and you've got the resume that Ed Foley does, can our special teams be this bad, Jake?
I don't know. It's obviously hard to watch. It's not just like one guy on the special teams unit. The blocking's poor. The
coverage.
Pitch man. Yeah, coverage downfield. It's really tough, and it's crazy. The crazy thing is that it's been 10 years of this. We all remember Bruce Reed with Mike Riley. The Scott Frost era special teams was nothing to write home about, and it just seems to be here lingering in Lincoln. I don't know what it is.
I'm pretty sure he sits right in this seat.
That's right.
I mean, I'm pretty sure the guy that's come in and fixed this issue before, and the only guy who's done really any good at special teams coaching and riding the ship on special teams, I'm pretty sure he sits right in this seat from 6 to 8 a.m. every morning here on The Ticket. Now, because I work for The Ticket, and his wife is an incredibly special lady who helped my family and I find our home. Shout out to Laura Bush. If you're looking for a house, no better realtor in all of Lincoln, go find her. I don't want them to call Bush because I don't want Bill Bush to go anywhere because he's doing a phenomenal job from 6 to 8 a.m. with the morning show, early break, Jake Sorensen, Steve Sippel, who, by the way, are both phenomenal. But, man, I feel like our football team needs it. Is there anybody else who can come in and right the ship on special teams? Jake, your thoughts on this?
Bo Pelini did pretty good that one time. Maybe he could be kind of like the Doc Sadler of Nebraska basketball, come back as an assistant.
Did you say Bo Pelini did pretty good that one time?
Well, remember, there was one year he specifically took over for special teams. Might have been more DeMornay than anything, but it's still, you know, a big improvement.
We had one guy do something one time. All right. All right, let's move on to – we'll talk more about special teams. And actually, I want to chat a little bit of Nebraska volleyball on tomorrow's show as well. They just keep – I mean, they swept USC like it was nothing. They just keep kicking the crap out of ranked teams after ranked team after ranked team. Allie Battenhorst, hey, great to see you in Lincoln. Here's a little tush kush on the way out, and I mean that with respect. It was actually kind of cool. There was a video of her meeting up with all her former teammates the day before the match, and that was cool to see. But man, they just spanked USC, number 20 in the country, swept them, sent them out the door, didn't think twice about it. We got to show Nebraska volleyball just a smidge to a whole lot more love here. But let's talk about some of the football games from this past weekend. All right, Alabama versus Georgia, the game of the year. Alabama jumps out 28-0, and I'm watching this game, and I'm watching Jalen Milroe just run all over them. And again, I feel like I'm watching the best, and stay with me when I say this, the best middle school team play the worst middle school team, because a lot of times your best athlete goes a quarterback, and they just run all over the place, and it looks like the other team just has no shot. And I'm like, but wait, this isn't middle school. This is Alabama, and this is Georgia. Like, how can Georgia look like they have no answers whatsoever? It was mind-blowing to me. It was interesting, though, because I'm watching Kirby Smart, and this may be the best coaching job he's ever done. He's 1-6 versus Alabama now. And even the one time they beat Alabama, I don't want to take – that was for a national title. I don't want to take it away from them. But they lost to Alabama in the SEC title game. Alabama had two elite receivers that year. One of them was already out for the national title game. The other one's named Jameson Williams. And he was destroying Georgia in that game. And then he got hurt. And Georgia ended up winning that game, coming back from behind the moment Jameson Williams went out. Basically, Alabama's two top receivers are out. So, yes, Georgia won that game and won for the national title, but Kirby Smart is yet to beat a at-full-speed, at-full-strength Alabama team. And Kirby Smart is the best coach in college football right now. Kalen DeBoer is going to be pretty good, though. All he does is win everywhere he goes. I mean, my goodness gracious. Now, in all fairness, if you look at the talent composite rankings, the team with the most talent in the country, despite all the transfers after Nick Saban retired, is Alabama. According to these talent composite rankings, they're still number one. Imagine, I mean, they had multiple offensive linemen, their safety left. They had a lot of these guys are starting at other Big Ten SEC schools. Imagine had they stayed. Number two is Georgia, by the way. Top two most talented teams according to these talent composite rankings. Shout out and credit to Georgia. 28-0 at one point, 30-7 at halftime. And they fought all the way back. I don't care. You can argue Alabama let down. Well, yeah. Okay. Georgia looked a little wide-eyed in the beginning of the game. One team came out ready to play. The other team came out looking around, in my opinion. I don't know how Georgia does that with all the big games they played in the past few years, including back-to-back national titles, two out of the past 3 years. They fought back. They had almost 400 yards of offense in the second half versus Alabama, and they actually led 34-33. It lasted a whole 13 seconds because Alabama has this guy, this 17-year-old named Jameson Williams, who should be honestly a junior, maybe a senior in high school. And he's out there playing like the number one overall pick in the draft, except he's still got two more years in college football. So enjoy that, SEC teams, as you go against him. But this was a great game. It was shocking the beginning of the game. It was Georgia got my respect, and Carson Beck, who threw three first half interceptions, threw for nearly 350 yards in the second half and looked fearless in the second half. Also, the secondary play on both sides was just atrocious. Just like, wow. Alabama's got a ton of true freshmen back there. That's the weakness of their team. Coming into this game, Georgia's weakness was their D-line. Alabama's strength was their O-line. All right, Alabama's weakness is their secondary. Not lack of talent, but true freshmen. Georgia didn't have any pass catchers that had stood out this year. And so I picked Alabama simply because Georgia's weakness, their D-line, fed into Alabama's strength, which was their O-line, and it showed early on. Whereas Alabama's weakness, the secondary, didn't necessarily feed into Georgia's strength. Okay, because Georgia has good pass catchers, but they don't have anybody that's elite like they've had in recent years. They probably have more depth at wide receiver, tight end, pass catching-wise, but they don't have anybody that scares the crap out of you. All right, great game. Alabama ends up winning 41-34. Briefly, we have a new number one team in the country. It's the Alabama Crimson Tide. Texas, I'm heartbroken over this, falls to number two. Alabama, Texas, number three, Ohio State, number four, Tennessee, number five, Georgia, number six, Oregon. Seven is Penn State, eight's Miami. Should Miami have won that game?
Ooh, tough call. I don't think so. I think they should have went with the call on the field, I'd say.
So what I said, so for those who didn't see it, Virginia Tech goes into Miami, really outplays them for most of the game. Miami's got the lead. Virginia Tech throws the ball into the end zone at the end of the game. I have this right. Virginia Tech had the ball, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And essentially, Virginia Tech had basically caught the ball. Miami thought that they had intercepted. I have this all correct, right? It was so many days ago. I'm a little fuzzy. I've watched so much football. Okay. Yeah. And basically, the refs said it was a touchdown, which meant Virginia Tech had caught the ball and won the game, although Miami players were running around celebrating because they've never been known for doing that. They do like this 20-minute replay review, which is fine. The game's on the line. This literally dictates the end of the game. I'm cool with the amount of time. Let's get the call right. And my wife's sitting there, and she's like, what would you say? I said, I don't know how you can overturn it. If they say it's an interception, I don't know how you overturn it. If they say it's a catch, I don't know how you overturn it. You got to go with the call on the field. I don't know how you overturn. And they overturned it in favor of Miami, but it was the ACC replay crew. If I'm the ACC, I'm looking, well, Florida State's god-awful. This team's god-awful. Clemson might not be god-awful, but they lost 34-3 to Georgia. We got to have Miami win. Now, I don't know if this is what happened, but I buy into conspiracy theories. I don't laugh at them most of the time. I bet the tiebreaker in that ACC replay office was, we need Miami to win this game. Do you buy into that, or am I just a conspiracy theorist?
Well, I don't know. There's just been so many bad officiating all across college football that it's hard to
putting really, it mildly.
Like, yeah, it's hard to say that would be the case. I'll say this. The ACC and the Big 12 getting a first round bye. Something needs to be fixed about the playoffs already.
It's why Miami needed to win. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It's why Miami needed to win this game. Personally, for the first time in my life, I was actually rooting for Miami because the ACC is so awful. I don't want some 9-3 ACC team getting a first round bye. I don't know if Miami deserves a first round bye, but at least their record can be like 11-1, and it gives the appearance of maybe they should deserve it or something like that. All right, so Alabama gets the win over Georgia. Miami gets the comeback win over Va Tech. Penn State, Illinois. This was a game that was 7-7 at halftime. Illinois played well. They fought. This was competitive. It was 14-7 going into the fourth quarter. And correct me if I'm wrong, Jake, but Penn State got that last-minute touchdown to make it 21-7. Until then, and admittedly, this is when my family started to get sick, so I didn't get to see the whole end of this game. So maybe the last 7 minutes or whatever is different than what I believe it was. But I believe Penn State got a last-second touchdown to make it 21-7, which makes the score look a little bit wider than the actual game was. I was impressed by the way Illinois went in and competed. I'm sure they're not happy about the loss. I'm sure they're not happy about losing by 14 points. But Illinois actually raised their stock like just a smidgen in my eyes. They definitely didn't go down. All right, you look at Notre Dame. They had 280 yards of total offense. Louisville outgained them by over 100 yards, had 8 more first downs. Yet Notre Dame won. Here's the deal. Does it matter what Notre Dame does the rest of this year? Or is all anybody going to see is that they lost to Northern Illinois at home? Does it matter, Jake? If they go 11-1, does it matter?
Well, I think it matters. I mean, I think they'll get the playoffs at that point, but that's an ugly loss. Yeah, it's going to be tough to overlook it. And in previous iterations of college football, that would have wiped them from the championship contention, but they're still there.
Let me ask you a question. The 97 Huskers, in my opinion, were unequivocally the best team that year, with all due respect to Michigan. I genuinely think that we would have beaten Michigan. Now, with all due respect to Michigan, statistically, they had the best defense in the country. They had the Heisman Trophy winner, and they had the number one ranked strength of schedule in the entire country. But I grew up watching that Washington State team, and they barely beat that Washington State team. And any Washington State fan, including myself, will tell you there's still 2 seconds left on that clock in that Rose Bowl. But topic for another day. But I've always felt like the miracle in Missouri, the Matt Davison catch, people kind of almost equated that to a loss for Nebraska because it was a lucky, lucky bounce. Although good teams make their own luck, by the way. It's funny how that works. I've always felt like people have kind of held that against the 97 Huskers through the years, whether it be pollsters that year, and almost acted like Nebraska had a loss or half a loss. And ever since then, you know, people almost act like, oh, 94, 95 would beat 97. Not everybody, but sometimes when I ask them. And I think it's because of that. I think the Notre Dame game with Northern Illinois, it doesn't matter what they do, that's always going to be like 2, if not 3 losses in people's eyes. Like if Notre Dame loses more than 2 games this year, they will not get in or get the benefit of the doubt. And if they lose 2 games, they're going to be like the 11th seed right in front of the G5 team. By the way, Memphis lost to Navy. So Boise State, you are the by far front runner to get that G5 spot. Your 3-point loss in Eugene to Oregon, in my eyes, helps you. Boise State, I'm rooting for you. Don't screw it up because I don't want Liberty getting in. All right, Kansas. Good Lord. Kansas loses again. They're 1-4 on the season. They were supposed to be a dark horse for the Big 12 championship. I think Jake made the comment to me during the commercial, they might get 3 wins. And that's if you're rounding up by 2 games, it looks like right now. All right, Florida State, pray for Seminole Nation. They're 1-4. SMU, who shouldn't even be a power conference team, beats them 42-16. My goodness gracious. I feel like Florida State should just forfeit the rest of the year. This is what happens when you hire a bunch of mercenaries and you have a gathering of mercenaries rather than a football team. There aren't many teams in the country more talented than Florida State. Nick Saban predicted them to win the ACC conference after watching them practice this fall. NFL scouts have talked about how there's multiple first-round and second-round NFL draft picks on that roster in the future. It's not for lack of talent. Mike Norvell had one good year. And everyone was like, oh, he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm not pausing for effect. I'm trying to be nice. I think Mike Norvell's got a lot to prove. How about that? And I'll just leave it there. All right, Indiana. This is intriguing because I don't know if you know this. We're going to play them in a couple of weeks. Beats Maryland. This is the only team they've played so far that's an FBS team with a winning record. All right, UCLA is actually, I think, 1-4 or 2-3. But UCLA and Maryland are their two best opponents, and their combined record is 4-5. So that would make them, let me see here. Yeah, Maryland's 3-2. So Indiana, I mean, they look dynamic on offense. Going in, I haven't looked at the updated stats, but going into last Saturday's game, They were one of only five teams in the country that was top five in offense, in scoring offense, top five in scoring defense. Now, they haven't been tested. They haven't played anybody. But I'm telling you right now, my former co-host for the Big Ten Conference, Rhett Lewis, is an Indiana alum. And all summer, he was working on me while we do Big Ten shows. Hey, man, they're going to be better. Hey, man, they're going to be better. And I'm like, okay. Rhett's really smart. And then I met a bunch of the Indiana guys at Big Ten Media Days, and I bought into it. I'm like, well, they're not going to suck. They might actually be above average. They look like they're definitely above average. But they haven't played anybody yet. We're going to learn a lot more about Indiana. But they beat Maryland 42-28. They put up over 500 yards of total offense. And this is really a pretty competitive game. But Indiana pulled away late to win 42-28. Utah. Can't figure out Utah. Well, Cam Rising did not play. So Utah's got a true freshman, a quarterback. And unlike our guy, he's not yet the strength of their team. Utah goes into Oklahoma State, who has the most experienced offensive line in the history of college football, had 10 returning starters, had the nation's best running back from a year ago coming back, and Oklahoma State's lost two games in a row, just lost by, what, 22 points to Kansas State, who just lost by 29 points to BYU. College football's so fun. But Utah got booed at halftime by their own fans, lost 23-10 to Arizona, who I have never thought was going to be that great this year. The carousel that is the Big 12 Conference, it is the most entertaining conference to watch, ladies and gentlemen, if you just keep an eye on those teams. And like I said earlier, all of a sudden Colorado's 4-1, and if they beat Kansas State this upcoming weekend, they got them in Boulder, all of a sudden they're a player in the Big 12. And if you're a player in the Big 12, I'm with Jake, we got to fix this, the top four buys. There's top four teams getting to buy an automatic power four because there's really two and then another two. And then everybody else conferences. It's really the Big Ten, SEC, then Big 12, ACC, and then everybody else getting those top four buys, the four conference champs. We got to fix that. What if Colorado won the Big 12 and got like the four seed? I'm just saying. I'm not predicting it, by the way. But what if it happened? I just blew Jake's mind. He doesn't even know what to say.
Well, a text from Justin. He says the paperwork's already being drawn up to make Prime the next coach at Florida State if that happens, I think.
Ooh. I don't know. I think Florida State people do like Mike Norvell. I think their eyes aren't yet open like Jake and mine's eyes are. Then we can be objective. Although if you could get Prime, they might make a change. All right, Utah loses, much to my surprise, to Arizona. Utah went in with a true freshman quarterback into Oklahoma State and pushed around the Cowboys. Like pushed them around the entire game. Physically manhandled them. And then go home and lose to an Arizona team that I don't think is as good. I'm starting to question Oklahoma State though. So Oklahoma State loses 42-20 to Kansas State, who is ranked. Again, they're going to be playing Colorado this weekend. This is a big game for Colorado this upcoming weekend. I mean, this is a pretty even game, though. Oklahoma State can still play offense, but they gave up 559 yards on defense. If they could ever play defense there in Stillwater to balance out Gundy's offense, they'd be a dangerous team. And he's done really good during his tenure, 20-plus years in Oklahoma State. All right, shout out to Coach Gundy there for the Oklahoma State Cowboys. He's done a good job, but get a defensive coordinator, my man. I'm just saying. You're a good coach. Good offensive mind. Get some help on defense. Hope Pelini's still out there, ain't he?
I think so.
Well, we wouldn't have to face him every year, so I could live with that. Go to Oklahoma State. He'd make them a legit contender, at least in the Big 12, year in and year out. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's been your recap. The top college football games this past weekend. Let's see. Already looked at the top 10. See if I have any final thoughts here. Michigan's sitting at number 10. Ooh, should they have lost to Minnesota?
I think Minnesota should have got that onside kick at least.
They should have absolutely gotten the onside kick. Yeah. Minnesota really kind of outplayed Michigan, not gargantuanly, but just by a smidge in this game. And then Minnesota scores, kicks the onside kick, gets the onside kick, and then the refs called them for offsides and they didn't get the ball and Michigan won the game. Michigan 10, USC 11. Notre Dame's at 14. Did Northern Illinois lose? They must have.
Yeah, they did.
They were ranked. All I see when I look at Notre Dame right now is the Huskies logo. I don't know why that is. That's a little bit unfair talking about Northern Illinois. I'm going to let that go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we will be reacting to Matt Rhule's press conference. Don't go anywhere.